supporters of Ka'amas and justice at heart. But a lot of them are just using that as a battle cry while they settle old scores.
Yeah,
Han said sourly.
So what do we do?
Only one thing we can do,
Leia said.
We have to take the excuse away from them. And that means getting the names of the actual Bothans that were involved and putting them on trial.
There was a subtle change in Han's emotions.
Yeah,
he said.
Well, Card's trying.
Leia frowned.
Did you speak to him today? I thought he'd already left Coruscant.
Far as I know he has, Han said. No, I just put out the word with a few smuggling people I know that I want to talk to Mazik.
What about?
I just wanted to find out whether this Shada Ducal really worked for him, Han told her, and why exactly she left.
Leia smiled.
You wouldn't be worried about Card, would you?
No,
Han protested.
Course not. He could take care of himself.
It's all right, dear,
she soothed him, patting his leg again.
I like him, too.
I don't exactly like him,
Han said, still protesting.
I mean, he can be a real pain in the neck sometimes.
So could you, dear,
Leia reminded him.
Still can, for that matter. You know, I sometimes think Card is sort of what you would have been if you hadn't joined the Rebellion.
Maybe,
Han said.
Except for the beard.
Thank the Force for small favors,
Leia said dryly.
Anyway, that's how I spent my day. Aside from chatting with smugglers, how did you spend yours?
Thinking, mostly, he said. I was thinking it was about time we got away for a while.
And a lovely thought that is,
Leia murmured.
But Gaverson would have a fit if I tried to leave right now.
That might make it worthwhile all by itself, Han said. I don't think I've ever seen puffers throw a fit.
Leia smiled.
I appreciate the offer, Han. I really do. But you know we can't.
You give up too easily, he reproved her casually. I'll bet you I could arrange something.
Leia pulled away from the massage, turning to frown at him. There had been another change in his emotions just then.
And assuming I took that bet?
She asked suspiciously.
What else would you tell me you did today?
He favored her with one of his innocent looks.
Me? Nothing much. You taking the bet or not?
Out with it, Han,
she said, putting some intimidation into her frown.
Where did you book us a flight to?
As always, the intimidation bounced off without noticeable effect.
Nowhere important,
he said, a smile now lurking beneath all the innocence.
I just thought we could take a little jaunt out to Kanchan Sector. Packrick Major, to be exact.
Leia searched her memory. She'd heard of Kanchan Sector, and vaguely remembered Packrick Major being the sector capital, but that was about it.
What's out there that we're interested in?
She asked.
Absolutely nothing, Han assured her. Well, I mean, except for an annual sector conference that a New Republic official really ought to attend. You know, diplomatic courtesy and all that.
She sighed.
And what crisis are they going through that they need me to mediate?
That's the beauty of it,
he said, grinning openly now.
There isn't one. Everything out there is real peaceful. We'd sit through a few boring meetings, then head off into the silence and relax.
You assume there's silence somewhere nearby that we can get to?
There is, Han said. Packrick Major's got a twin planet, Packrick Minor, where they've got nothing but farms, a few resorts, and lots of undeveloped countryside.
This was sounding better and better.
Farms, you say?
Fruit and tall grain, mostly,
Han said with a nod.
And forests, and mountains, and all the silence you want. And no one here even has to know we're going.
Leia sighed.
Except Gaverson,
she said, feeling a twinge of regret.
And he'll never approve.
Han's grin turned smug.
Sure he will. Fact is, I called him this afternoon and set it all up. He loves the idea.
She blinked. He loves the idea?
Well, maybe he doesn't love it, exactly.
Han backpedaled.
But he's letting us go, and that's what's important, right?
Right, Leia said, eyeing him. You going to drop the other glove or not?
Han shrugged.
He didn't exactly say it outright, he admitted reluctantly. But I got the feeling he wouldn't mind if the two of us sort of disappeared for a while.
Even with Thrawn on the loose?
Han made a face.
Especially with Thrawn on the loose.
Leia sighed, wrapping her arms around his neck. She should have guessed that there would be something like that behind it. Between the Bothan shooting controversy still clinging to Han, and her own support of Lando's unsubstantiated claim about seeing Thrawn, the two of them had become political embarrassments. No wonder Gaverson was jumping at the chance to get them out of the public eye for a while.
I'm sorry, Han,
she apologized.
I always ask that one question too many, don't I?
It's okay, hon,
we said, squeezing her tightly.
We don't have to let them take the shine off this, you know? It was our idea to take a vacation, no matter what they think it is.
Leia smiled tightly.
You can't throw me out, I quit.
She quoted the old joke.
Something like that, he said. Anyway, I talked to Chewie, and there's no problem with keeping the kids on Kashyyyk a little longer. It'll be some time just for the two of us.
Leia smiled tightly into his neck.
You know, that's almost exactly what I told myself when Gaverson sent us to Bothawee, she said. You saw how well that turned out.
Well, this time it's gonna work,
Han said positively.
No Bothans, no riots, no one shooting at us. Guaranteed.
I'll hold you to that,
she warned, pulling out of the hug for a quick kiss.
When do we leave?
As soon as you're packed, he said, squeezing her arm. And hurry up. I've been packed for hours.
Yes, sir,
Leia said, mock seriously, as she stood up and headed for their bedroom. Some quiet, peaceful time, away from trouble and controversy.
Yes, it was exactly what she needed.
The tall grain farms of Pakrik Minor. She could hardly wait.
Chapter 24
The scouts had spent the past 28 hours sweeping the system, and when they returned, they brought the report Admiral Pellion had been expecting. Except for the Chimera itself, the Pessetine system was about as deserted as a region of space could be.
Offhand, sir, I'd say he turned down your offer, Captain Artif said, coming up beside Pellion on the Star Destroyer's command walkway.
Perhaps,
Pellion said, gazing out the viewport at the stars.
It's also possible that my suggested timetable was a little optimistic. General Bell Iblis may be having difficulty convincing the New Republic hierarchy that it would be to their benefit to talk to me.
Or else he's having trouble putting together a big enough combat force to take on an Imperial Star Destroyer,
Artif said ominously.
It strikes me that this could be a giant arachnid's web we're comfortably settling ourselves into the middle of.
Relax, Captain,
Pellion soothed the younger man. For all his budding military capability, Artif had a tendency to ramble over his own tongue when he was feeling nervous.
Bell Iblis is a man of honor. He wouldn't betray my invitation that way.
I seem to recall that he was also once a man of extreme ambition,
Artif countered.
And at the moment, he looks to be getting lost among the swarm of other generals and admirals infesting the New Republic military. It could easily occur to an ambitious man that capturing you would dramatically increase his visibility.
Pellion smiled.
I'd like to believe that after all these years I could still be such a valuable prize,
he said.
But I hardly think that to be the case.
You can be as modest as you want, Admiral,
Artif said, gazing uneasily out at the starlit sky.
but right now you're about the only thing that's holding the Empire together."
Pelion gazed out at the stars.
"Or the only chance we have of survival,"
he added quietly.
"However you want to think about it, sir," Artif said, a note of asperity creeping into his voice. "The point remains that Colonel Vermel went out to deliver your message and never returned. Why?"
"I don't know,"
Pelion had to concede.
"I take it you have a theory?"
"Yes, sir. The same theory I've had since before we left Yagga Minor," Artif said. "I think Vermel learned something, either from Bel Iblis directly, or else he overheard something someone else said. That whatever he heard made it necessary for Bel Iblis to lock him up where he couldn't communicate with you. That at best we're wasting our time, and that at worst we're walking into a trap."
"It's still a worthwhile gamble, Captain,"
Pelion said quietly.
"We'll give Bel Iblis a few days to show up. After that..."
"Admiral Pelion!" the sensor officer called from the starboard crew pit. "Incoming ship, sir! Looks like 8 of them, coming in on vector 164/53.
Pelion felt his throat tighten.
"Identification?"
he asked, trying to keep his voice calm.
4 are Corellian gunships," another voice called. "The big one's a Kaloth battlecruiser. Looks like it's been heavily modified. 3 are Telgorn Pacifier-class assault boats. IDs inconclusive."
"What do you mean, inconclusive?" Artif demanded.
"Their IDs don't match anything in the registry," the officer said. "I'm running an overlay check to see if I can unravel them."
"Disguised ships," Artif said darkly.
"Smugglers use ID overlays, too,"
Pelion reminded him.
"So do pirates and some mercenary groups."
"I know that, sir," Artif said. "I also know that there's precious little in this system any of those groups could possibly want."
"A point,"
Pelion admitted.
"Communications officer, transmit our identification and ask for theirs."
"Identification transmitted," the other said. "No response." "Incoming ships have changed course," the sensor officer called. "Now on intercept vector with a Chimera."
Artif hissed tensely between his teeth.
"Steady, Captain,"
Pelion advised him.
"Lieutenant, get me a full sensor scan of the incoming ships, weapons capabilities and hull markings in particular."
"Acknowledged, sir."
"Admiral,"
another voice cut him off.
"Incoming ships have reconfigured into attack formation."
"I think, Admiral," Artif said, his voice hard, "that we have Bel Iblis's answer." Pelion closed his left hand into a fist at his side.
"Any hull markings, Lieutenant?"
he called.
"It's coming up now, sir." "Yes, sir, there are. The gunships are carrying Corellian Defense Force insignia. The others, the same, sir."
"Thank you,"
Pelion murmured. He could feel Artif's eyes on him, and the heat of the other's anger and bitter vindication.
"Captain, you'd best prepare the Chimera for combat."
"Yes, sir." Artif half-turned toward the portside crew pit. "All pilots to their fighters," he ordered. "Ready to launch on my command. Deflector screens powered up, all turbo lasers energized and ready."
"And tractor beams,"
Pelion added quietly. Artif threw him a puzzled glance.
"Sir?"
"We may want to bring in one or more of the ships,"
Pelion explained.
"Or some of the battle debris."
Artif's lip twitched.
"Yes, sir. All tractor beams, activate."
Pelion took a few steps closer to the forward viewport, moving away from the heightened buzz of activity from the crew pits and aft bridge. Could that really be Bel Iblis out there, blazing toward the Chimera in full battle formation? No. Ridiculous. He'd never met Bel Iblis in person, but everything he'd ever read about the man indicated a strong sense of honor and dignity. A man like that wouldn't pull what was essentially a cowardly sneak attack, not in response to an honest request for parley. Even in Bel Iblis's losing battles against Grand Admiral Thrawn, he'd maintained that same dignity. His battles against Thrawn.
Pelion smiled tightly. Yes, there it was. A way, perhaps, to find out whether or not that was really Bel Iblis leading that motley attack force out there. There was a movement of air at his side. It's possible he's just being cautious, Artif said, the words coming out with obvious reluctance. The shield overlap that comes from an attack formation like that makes it useful for defense as well. And he may simply not want to transmit his identity until he's closer. Pelion eyed the young captain with mild surprise.
You impress me, Captain, he said. One of the most important attributes of a good commander is the ability to think beyond his own expectations.
I want to be fair, sir, Artif said stiffly. But not at the risk of your ship. Do you want me to launch Ties or Praebirds?
Not yet, Pelion said, looking back out the viewport.
The incoming ships were visible now, tiny specks rapidly growing larger.
Whatever happens here, I want it clear that we did nothing to provoke hostilities.
For a long minute they stood together in silence and waited. The incoming ships grew steadily larger. And suddenly, they were speeding low across the Chimera, raking the Star Destroyer's upper surface with a blaze of turbolaser fire. They pulled up, heading directly for the bridge. Someone in one of the crew pits behind Pelion yelped with surprise or fear. And then they were gone, branching to either side around the command superstructure and pulling for the safety of distance. Artif let out a hissing breath. I think that proves their intentions, Admiral, he said. His earlier nervousness vanished into an icy professionalism. Request permission to attack.
Permission granted, Pelion said. But with turbo lasers only.
Artif gave him a sharp look. No fighters?
Not yet,
Pelion told him, searching the sky for the attackers. Probably still making their way around after that mad plunge aft.
I have something else planned for the Praebirds.
Artif threw a quick glance around them.
Admiral, I respectfully urge you to reconsider, he said, his voice barely loud enough for Pelion to hear. That battlecruiser is packing some serious weaponry. It went by too fast this time to do any major damage, but that kind of skittishness isn't likely to last. If we don't use the fighters to keep them at arm's length, we'll just be begging for trouble.
I understand your concerns, Captain, Pelion told him.
The attackers had come around into sight now, distant specks swinging around almost leisurely for their second pass.
But I have my reasons. Order turbolaser batteries to stand ready.
He could see Artif's throat working, but the captain merely gave him a curt nod.
Turbolaser crews, stand ready, he called harshly.
Trust me, Captain,
Pelion murmured, trying hard not to smile as his mind suddenly flashed back 10 years. Then he'd been the earnest captain standing on this same deck, trying in the most diplomatic way possible to make his superior see sense in the middle of a tense combat situation. He'd had much more experience than Artif, of course, but that had merely made his frustrations run that much deeper as he stood by helplessly and watched as the Chimera drove hard into certain disaster. And yet Thrawn had never reprimanded him for his impertinence or lack of understanding. He had merely continued calmly with his plans, allowing the results to speak for themselves. Pelion could only hope that the results of this plan would be even half so eloquent. The attackers had completed their circling and turned toward the Chimera.
Here they come, the sensor officer called. Looks like they're going to do a crossways run this time.
They're worried about running into the command superstructure,
Pelion commented.
That must mean one or more of their ships almost couldn't pull out in time on that last run.
Or else they're simply going for variety, Artif growled, frustration bubbling beneath the words.
Again the memories flickered, and again Pelion carefully suppressed his smile. Right now, in the heat of combat, a smile would definitely not be something Artif would understand.
Stand by, turbolasers, he said. Fire at will!
The attackers swept toward them, weapons blazing. The Chimera's turbolasers answered, and for a few seconds the sky outside the bridge became a dazzling display of green and red fire. And then the attackers were gone, clawing again for distance, and the Star Destroyer's awesome weaponry fell silent.
"Damage?"
Pelion called.
"Minor damage only,"
the report came from the starboard crew pit.
3 turbolaser tracking systems in Quadrant 1 have been knocked out, and there are some minimal hull breaches along the forward ridge line. They've been sealed off."
"They're trying to knock out all the turbolasers in Quadrant 1, Ardiff muttered. "Once they do that, that battlecruiser can just sit off the bow and blast away at the hull."
"That does seem to be their intention,"
Pelion agreed.
"Damage to the enemy?"
"Unknown, but probably minimal," the sensor officer reported. "That overlapping shield configuration of theirs is pretty strong. Not easy to punch through."
"But it's primarily ray shielding?"
Pelion asked.
"Yes, sir. At least on the battlecruiser," the officer confirmed. "The gunships also have some minimal particle shielding."
"We're not going to have much chance of hitting them with proton torpedoes, if that's what you're thinking," Ardiff warned. "In close, their angular speed is too high for the torpedoes to track. And at any real distance, they'll have all the time they need to target and destroy them."
"I understand the tactics involved,"
Pelion said mildly.
"Let's see if we can rewrite the script a bit. Colonel Boss, order 1 Preybird squadron to launch on my command. Their attack vector..."
He paused, following the attackers with his eyes. They had reached the farthest point of their curve now, and were starting to swing back around for another pass.
"Attack vector 23x7,
he decided.
"Better stay on that vector in tight parade flight formation until otherwise ordered."
He could feel Ardiff's eyes on him.
"Parade flight formation, sir?"
the captain echoed, clearly not believing his ears.
"The shield overlap will help protect them from enemy fire,"
Pelion explained.
"Not well enough," Ardiff countered. "Not against a Kaloth battlecruiser at close-in range."
"With any luck, they won't need to get that close,"
Pelion said. Just as with their last 2 runs, he saw the attackers were coming straight in.
"Colonel, launch fighter squadron."
"Acknowledged," Colonel Bass said. "Fighters launched."
Pelion turned back to the viewport. A few seconds later, the Preybirds appeared around the edge of the hull, a clump of close-formation drive tails arrowing straight out toward the incoming attackers.
"Stand by number 8 proton torpedo cluster," he called. "All 15 torpedoes to fire in 3x5 sequence along vector 23x7.
The background hum in the bridge suddenly seemed to falter.
"Sir?"
the fire control officer asked hesitantly.
"That's the same vector..."
"As the Preybirds,"
Pelion finished for him.
"Yes, I know, Lieutenant. You have your orders."
"Yes, sir."
"Fire torpedoes on my command only,"
Pelion continued, watching the Preybirds streaking toward the incoming attackers.
"Almost there."
"Colonel Bass, order the Preybirds to perform a full-speed Sagari Blossom maneuver on my command. Lieutenant, fire proton torpedoes."
"Torpedoes fired,"
the other confirmed. And from beneath the Chimera's bow, a tight column of torpedo trails appeared. 5 groups of 3 torpedoes each, driving hard directly toward the now distant drive trails of the Preybirds. Abruptly, Ardiff gave a small snort of understanding.
"Ah, of course."
"Indeed,"
Pelion agreed, watching the departing torpedoes closely, painfully aware of the sliced second timing that was required.
"Almost there."
"Colonel Bass? Now!"
For a single agonizing heartbeat, nothing happened. Then, with parade flight precision, the Preybirds broke out of their clustered formation. Turning sharply out and away from their original vector, they formed a brief stylized Sagari flower shape as they curved back around toward the Chimera. The enemy turbolaser fire that had been pounding away at their overlapped shields split in response, swinging outward to track each of the individual fighters, and with a flash of brilliant light, the first three proton torpedoes roared through the undefended center area, blazed their way directly between the two gunships in the lead, and impacted squarely against the bow of the battlecruiser. Even from the Chimera's distance, the consternation among the attacking ships was instantly apparent. Instantly apparent and utterly useless. Even as the bunched ships clawed desperately to get some distance between them, the second torpedo group hit, blowing out an impressive cloud of shattered hull metal and transparasteel. The third group must have run into a piece of debris from that second blast. All three torpedoes blew prematurely, sending one of the dodging gunships corkscrewing violently into the night with a ruptured hull. By the time the last three torpedoes had spent their fury, the battle was over. The battlecruiser had been reduced to rubble, and the other ships were running for their lives.
"Brilliantly done, Admiral,"
Artif said, admiration and embarrassment mixing in his voice.
I'm sorry if I sounded...
"Understood, Captain,"
Pelion assured him.
"Believe it or not, I've been in your place myself."
"Thank you, sir."
Artif gestured toward the glowing cloud of burning wreckage. "Shall I send a team to retrieve some of the debris? It might be able to tell us who that was."
"Go ahead and send a team," Pelion said. "But I can tell you right now that it wasn't General Bel Iblis."
"Really?"
Artif said, his eyes on Pelion as he gestured his order to the crew pit. Not questioning this time, but honestly curious. "How can you be that sure?"
"First things first," Pelion said. "While the team is retrieving the debris, I want you to run the record of the battle through the predictor. It's still online, isn't it?"
"Yes, sir,"
Artif said, smiling tightly with understanding. "That's why you let them do that second run against us, isn't it? So that there would be enough data for the predictor to analyze."
"Exactly,"
Pelion said.
"It didn't work very well at figuring out the tactics of a given enemy. Let's see if it can work in reverse to figure out the enemy from the given tactics. If we're lucky, it may be able to give us at least a hint of who out there might favor this particular combat style."
"And you're sure it wasn't Bel Iblis?"
Pelion looked out at the glowing cloud.
"Have you ever heard of an A-wing slash, Captain?"
"I don't think so, sir."
"It's a New Republic battle technique,"
Pelion said, turning back to face him.
"It requires highly precise timing, which is why it's hardly ever used. A group of starfighters, X-wings usually, heads directly toward the defense line guarding a capital ship. At the last second, the X-wings disengage, veering around and away."
"Rather like what our prey birds just did."
"Exactly as our prey birds just did,"
Pelion nodded.
"The defender's natural reaction, of course, is to assume the attackers are attempting a flanking maneuver and veer to follow and engage. But what they don't realize until it's too late is that a group of A-wings has been flying directly behind the X-wings, hidden by the X-wings themselves and their drive glow. By the time they spot that second wave, they're too far out of line to block them, and the A-wings have a clear run through to the now undefended ship."
"Clever enough," Artif said. "I can see why you wouldn't want to use it very often, though it certainly worked well enough with proton torpedoes playing the A-wing's role. What does this have to do with Bel Iblis?"
Pelion smiled tightly.
"I was at the battle where he invented it."
Artif blinked in surprise, and then he too smiled.
"In other words, it's not a tactic he would be fooled by?"
"Not a chance in the galaxy,"
Pelion agreed.
"But with those Corellian markings, I'd say someone worked very hard to make us think it was him."
Artif sobered.
"Someone from the Empire?"
"Or someone from the New Republic,"
Pelion said.
"We know there are factions on our side who don't want peace. I imagine they have their counterparts on the other."
"Probably,"
Artif said.
"So what do we do now?"
"Whoever ordered that attack wanted us to think Bel Iblis was behind it,"
Pelion said.
The small size of the force, plus the quick and unashamed disengagement, implies he didn't really care whether or not he actually inflicted any damage. His purpose, therefore, must have been to drive us away from here before Bel Iblis could arrive.
And so we stay?
So we stay,
Pelion agreed.
At least a while.
Yes, sir.
Ardiff pursed his lips.
You realize, of course, that our unknown opponent may not give up this easily. He may attack again.
Pelion turned again to look out at the fiery debris.
Let him try.
To be concluded. This is Mark Thompson. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of Star Wars: Spectre of the Past by Timothy Zahn. This program was directed by Kevin Thompson, executive producer Aaron Blank. Star Wars: Spectre of the Past is a production of Lucasfilm Limited, copyright 2013. All rights reserved. Used under authorization. Music composed by John Williams. Music publishing by Warner Tamerlane Publishing Corporation and Bantha Music. Music Master Production Copyright 2007, Lucasfilm Limited. This has been a Random House audio presentation. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.